Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
May God bless the United States, President Trump, his administration, and may God bless Honduras.
President Trump's announced plans to pardon former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, serving a 45-year sentence in the U.S. for trafficking hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States. Trump made the shocking announcement ahead of Sunday's election in Honduras, where Trump-backed candidates leading in the polls. We'll go to Honduras for the latest. Then the Trump administration stopped issuing visas for Afghan nationals and has halted decisions on all asylum applications after an Afghan man who once worked for the CIA opened fire near the White House, shooting two members of the West Virginia National Guard, killing one. We'll speak to the head of Afghan Evac, which has helped resettle Afghans in the United States.
My number one concern is that all these 195,000 Afghans that came here during the last administration are going to be painted with the brush of this man.
We'll also speak to reporter Spencer Ackerman. His latest piece is headlined, "He Killed for the CIA in Afghanistan. Trump Blames Afghan Culture Instead of Langley's." All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Venezuela's condemned President Trump's unilateral declaration in a Saturday post on social media that all airspace surrounding Venezuela is closed. Meanwhile, President Trump said the U.S. is poised to launch attacks inside Venezuela itself. This comes as Republican-led committees in the House and Senate say they'll hold oversight hearings to investigate the Pentagon's attacks on boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, following a Washington Post report alleging Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered the killing of all crew members on an alleged drug vessel, including the survivors of an initial strike. According to the Post, Secretary Hegseth ordered the killing of two people as they clung to the smoldering wreckage of their boat after a first attack by the U.S. off the coast of Trinidad. A source told the Post, quote, "The order was to kill everybody," unquote. Under international law, it's a war crime to refuse to spare the lives of people who are attempting to surrender or otherwise unable to fight. Human rights groups, meanwhile, have condemned all of the Pentagon's attacks on boats as war crimes. On Sunday, President Trump denied Hegseth gave an order to kill everyone aboard the vessel. But later in the evening, Hegseth contradicted Trump's denial, posting a meme on social media depicting the children's cartoon character Franklin the Turtle opening fire from a helicopter on boats below. Meanwhile, Venezuela's Vice President Delcy Rodriguez called on other oil-producing states and OPEC to oppose any U.S. attack on Venezuela.
Venezuela formally denounces before this body that the government of the United States of America intends to take control of Venezuela's vast oil reserves, the largest on the planet, through the use of lethal military force against the territory, the people, and the institutions of the country.
President Trump says he'll pardon Honduras's former president, who was sentenced by a U.S. court last year to 45 years in prison for directing a massive cocaine trafficking operation. Prosecutors showed how Juan Orlando Hernandez was president of Honduras from 2014 to 2022, ran Honduras as a narco state, accepting millions of dollars in bribes from cocaine traffickers in exchange for protection, including deploying the Honduran foreign national police to safeguard cocaine loads as they were transported through Honduras. News of Trump's looming pardon came just days ahead of Sunday's presidential elections in Honduras, where a right-wing candidate from Juan Orlando Hernandez's party has taken a narrow lead, just under half the votes having been counted at this point. Nasri Asfura is the former mayor of Tegucigalpa. He received a boost when Trump endorsed him and threatened to cut off aid to Honduras if voters elected one of his rivals, who Trump assailed as communist. The death toll from Israel's more than two-year assault on Gaza surpassed 70,000 Palestinians over the weekend, according to Gaza's health ministry. Al Jazeera is reporting that Israeli drones dropped a bomb near Al-Farabi School Saturday morning, killing two brothers, Juma and Fadi Tamer Abu Asi. On Sunday, three more Palestinians were killed and two others injured in Israeli attacks, raising the death toll to 356 since the U.S. brokered ceasefire went into effect October 10th. Meanwhile, Israel returned 15 more Palestinian bodies to Gaza as part of the first phase of the ceasefire deal. This comes as Israeli forces claim to have killed 40 Hamas fighters in southern Gaza over the past 40 days. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces Thursday fatally shot two Palestinian men at point-blank range after they appeared to surrender to troops. The killings were captured on video, showing the two men coming out of a garage, holding their hands up and lifting their shirts to show they were not carrying explosives. The troops later shot the men dead. This comes as the Wafa News Agency is reporting Israeli forces have arrested a 16-year-old child at a military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank as Israel intensifies drone operations over the Jenin refugee camp. Israeli authorities have freed a Palestinian-American boy after holding him for over 9 months without trial in an Israeli military prison where he says he was physically and psychologically tortured. Mohammed Ibrahim of Palm Bay, Florida, was just 15 years old when Israeli forces arrested him in the occupied West Bank for allegedly throwing stones at Israeli settlers' vehicles. If convicted, he faced up to 20 years in prison. Ibrahim was released on Thanksgiving Day following a pressure campaign from more than 100 U.S. civil rights groups, as well as 27 members of Congress. He was hospitalized after his release, treated for severe weight loss and scabies that left him with a serious skin infection. His family said they had almost no direct contact with Ibrahim throughout his detention. In October, a boy told a human rights group he and other Palestinian prisoners suffered beatings, severe cold, starvation, social isolation, and medical neglect. Meanwhile, in Syria, Israeli forces raided a village outside Damascus Friday, killing 13 people, including two children. Six Israeli soldiers were wounded in the clashes. Israel claimed to be targeting members of Lebanon's branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. Since the fall of Bashar al-Assad's regime last December, Israel's launched frequent air raids across Syria and ground incursions in the south. The Trump administration stopped issuing visas for Afghan nationals and has halted decisions on all asylum applications after a 29-year-old Afghan man opened fire near the White House last Wednesday, killing a soldier with the West Virginia National Guard and leaving another in critical condition. Ramanullah Lakhanwal has been charged with first-degree murder, will likely face terrorism charges. He previously worked in a CIA-backed Afghan army unit known as a Zero Unit. He entered the United States in 2021 through Operation Allies Welcome, a program that saw the U.S. evacuate thousands of Afghans who faced reprisals from the Taliban over the support of the U.S. occupation. He applied for asylum in 2024 and was granted refugee status last April under the second Trump administration. President Trump called the attack an act of hatred committed by an animal and pledged his administration would re-vet every Afghan granted asylum in the U.S. Meanwhile, United Nations Special Rapporteur on Afghanistan has spoken out against collective punishment. Richard Bennett said in a statement, quote, "The perpetrator should face accountability, but the entire Afghan community must not be punished due to the actions of one individual," unquote. President Trump's announced he is canceling all executive orders signed by former President Joe Biden using an auto pen, which is a device that reproduces signatures. President Trump has also used auto pen to sign official documents. Back in September, the White House hung a photo of Biden's auto pen signature instead of Biden's portrait in the walkway featuring portraits of former presidents. Biden signed 162 executive orders during his presidency, though it's unclear how many were signed using AutoPen. President Trump rescinded nearly 70 of Biden's executive orders shortly after taking office and another 19 in March. President Trump Wednesday blasted New York Times reporter Katie Rogers, calling her ugly after she published a story raising questions about President Trump's health, writing he was, quote, showing signs of fatigue. The article also detailed an Oval Office event last month where President Trump appeared drowsy with drooping eyelids, dozing on and off for several seconds. President Trump also insulted CBS News White House correspondent Nancy Cordes on Thursday after she asked him about the suspect in Wednesday's attack on two National Guard members in Washington, D.C. Trump snapped back at her, "Are you stupid? Are you a stupid person?" unquote. Last month, President Trump called Bloomberg's White House correspondent Catherine Lucey piggy after she questioned him about releasing the Epstein files. In Hong Kong, officials say at least 151 people died in a fire that engulfed a high-rise apartment complex last Wednesday. The blaze is Hong Kong's deadliest in more than 70 years, and the exact cause has yet to be determined. Eight people have been arrested on corruption charges after investigation revealed the netting that covered scaffolding used in renovations was not up to fire safety codes. This is Joey Young, whose grandmother's home was consumed by the fire.
All the memories have all gone, and it's all because of those people who caused the fire. I can't accept it. So today I came with my father and my family to lay flowers. I'm not asking to get anything back, but at least give some justice to the families of the deceased, to those who are still alive.
A Babson College student was deported to Honduras while she was trying to fly from Boston to Texas to surprise her family for Thanksgiving. 19-year-old Annie Lucia Lopez Beloza was told there was an issue with her boarding pass before she was detained by immigration officials at the airport and sent to Texas and then to Honduras. The day after she was arrested, a federal judge issued an emergency order prohibiting the government from removing her from the United States for 72 hours. Lopez Beloza told the Boston Globe she's currently staying with her grandparents in Honduras. A judge in Georgia has dismissed the election interference case against President Trump. The ruling effectively ends the last effort to prosecute Trump for attempting to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Pete Skandalakis, executive director of the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, said he would not pursue charges against President Trump. More than 1,000 people have died in devastating floods and landslides in Sri Lanka, Indonesia, and Thailand, leaving hundreds of thousands of people stranded without shelter. In Indonesia, nearly 600 people have died, and over 500,000 are displaced on the island of Sumatra as authorities frantically search for survivors. In Thailand, at least 170 people were killed in one of the worst floods in decades. Meanwhile, in Sri Lanka, 334 people died as a result of Cyclone Dithwa. It's the worst natural disaster to hit the island in 20 years since the devastating 2004 tsunami. On Sunday, low-lying areas of Sri Lanka's capital, Colombo, were flooded after heavy rains triggered mudslides across the island. Nearly 148,000 people have been displaced.
Rain nonstop for 3 days. We heard about the warnings of flooding, but we didn't expect water levels would get this high. As usual, we moved our belongings that could be moved to a higher level, but that didn't help. Everything is underwater.
In the Philippines, tens of thousands of protesters marched in the capital, Manila, calling for President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to resign after a corruption scandal revealed his government took billions in kickbacks from faulty flood control projects. Heavy losses from two recent typhoons, which killed more than 250 people, spurred public outrage. Marcos has vowed that at least 37 government officials implicated in the corruption scandal will be in jail by December. But protesters say many more officials should be in jail sooner.
It's been 5 months since the flood control scam erupted, and no high official has been jailed yet. After what Ombudsman Romulla said, that at least 10% of Congress is involved in the anomalies in flood control projects, a case has been filed and a warrant issued for only one person. The senators and congressmen involved have still not been jailed.
In California, 4 people were killed, 11 others hospitalized after a gunman opened fire on a child's birthday party at a banquet hall in the city of Stockton Saturday. Police say a suspect or suspects remain at large. According to the Gun Violence Archive, there have been at least 380 mass shootings in the United States so far this year. And the Trump administration announced it will no longer commemorate World AIDS Day, which is observed around the world today, December 1st. According to an email viewed by the New York Times, the State Department this month instructed employees and grantees to, quote, refrain from publicly promoting World AIDS Day through any communication channels, including social media, media engagement, speeches, or other public-facing messaging, unquote. Earlier this year, the Trump administration froze funding for many public health programs dedicated to fighting HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Coming up, ahead of Sunday's election in Honduras, President Trump announced plans to pardon the former Honduran president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, serving a 45-year sentence for trafficking hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States. We'll go to Honduras. Stay with us. Musician Carla Lara performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump has announced plans to pardon former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, serving a 45-year sentence in a U.S. prison for trafficking hundreds of tons of cocaine into the United States. Last year, Hernandez was convicted in New York of drug trafficking and weapons charges. He once bragged, quote, "We are going to stuff the drugs up the gringos' noses," unquote. A trial prosecutor showed how Hernandez ran Honduras as a narco state from 2014 until 2022, accepting millions of dollars in bribes from cocaine traffickers in exchange for protection, including deploying the Honduran National Police to safeguard cocaine loads as they were transported through Honduras. One unnamed Drug Enforcement Administration agent who worked on the case described Trump's move as, quote, lunacy. Trump's announcement came on Friday, 2 days before Hondurans went to the polls Sunday to pick a new president. Ahead of the vote, Trump also endorsed the conservative candidate, Nasri Tito Asfura, the former mayor of Tegucigalpa. He's a member of the right-wing National Party, the same party as Juan Orlando Hernandez. Asfura has a slim lead in early election results. Trump wrote on Truth Social, "If Tito Asfura wins for president of Honduras because the United States has so much confidence in him, his policies, and what he will do for the great people of Honduras, we will be very supportive. If he doesn't win, the United States will not be throwing good money after bad." Trump continued, "Additionally, I'll be granting a full and complete pardon to former President Juan Orlando Hernandez, who's been, according to many people that I greatly respect, treated very harshly and unfairly," unquote. This all comes as the Trump administration has been bombing drug boats in the Caribbean Pacific and has called for the closing of all airspace over Venezuela saying that Venezuela is involved with drug trafficking. For more on the possible pardon and the Honduran elections, we're joined by two guests. Dana Frank is professor of history emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz, author of The Long Honduran Night, Resistance, Terror, and the United States in the Aftermath of the Coup. She attended the trial of Juan Orlando Hernandez last year here in New York. And in Honduras, Rodolfo Pastor is with us, the former secretary of the presidency under the current president, Xiomara Castro. He's also a Libre Party candidate for city council in San Pedro Sula, where we're speaking to him right now. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin with Rodolfo Pastor in Honduras. Can you talk about the pardoning, well, it looks like the imminent pardoning of Juan Orlando Hernandez, often called Joe, J-O-H, in prison for 45 years for drug trafficking and other charges. The significance of this.
Of course, Amy. Good to be here. Thank you so much for paying attention to Honduras. We're waking up to results that are shocking the nation and are in a degree, at least, reflection of what President Trump stated a few days before the elections happened. For us, it's shocking. It's a blow to Honduran dignity and democracy that a foreign president would, first of all, state publicly what his preferences were. He actually suggested that Hondurans should vote for a specific candidate. And he went even further as to suggest that he would pardon Juan Orlando Hernandez. I think it exposes a very stark contradiction between what he is trying to portray as a justification for what's happening in the Caribbean Sea and against Venezuela, and at the same time, what is going on here in Honduras. I mean, this is, as you very clearly stated, a man who conspired to traffic tons and tons of cocaine and weapons between Honduras and the United States. He is someone who has been sentenced and convicted for his crimes committed against the United States, but someone who has not been held accountable by Honduran justice. Hondurans are were at a first moment very hopeful that because of what the U.S. had been able to do, what the Southern District of New York and the attorneys there had been able to do, what the court system in the United States had done, was just a partial justice for Honduras. Because here in Honduras, there has been no process against Juan Orlando Hernandez. So for President Trump to be so brazen in intervening in a sovereign process right before the elections, and also to be so hostile and aggressive in his stance. You know, he's almost threatening Honduras that if we don't do what he is demanding that we do, then that he will wreak vengeance against Honduras by sending back someone who's done so much damage here.
Can you talk about who the three candidates are? And again, the significance of Trump saying if he Esfoda doesn't win, that the U.S. would be withholding money to Honduras.
Exactly. He's basically threatening Honduras if we go ahead and make a sovereign decision right before our elections, right? And the three candidates, the main party candidates were, number one, Rixi Moncada, who is the candidate for the official party and who represents, you know, the continuation of what Xiomara Castro as president has started, which is a third alternative party that was born from the resistance to the coup back in 2009 and reshaped the electoral and political party system here in Honduras against two traditional historic parties that had alternated in power for the last century. So this was a very progressive, reform-oriented project, and that has been, as results are coming in, devastatingly defeated. In second place, it would be Nasri Tito Asfura, who represents the National Party, which is the same party, as you also stated, that Juan Orlando comes from and who is surrounded by most of the people who surrounded Juan Orlando during his government. And in the third place, it would be Nasrallah, who is this TV broadcaster who portrayed himself as an outsider, who represents the very traditional, the most historic political party in Honduras, the Liberal Party, and who was perceived as the most probable winner of the elections until Trump came in with his statement. So the result that Tito Asfura is now leading the polls, that Libre has been sent to a very distant third place in the results, is in many ways a reflection of this very hostile attitude by President Trump, who basically discarded Nasrallah as having any possibilities. He accused him of being a socialist in disguise, of having aided Xiomara, because, of course, at one point, we all joined forces to be able to oust Juan Orlando and his very corrupt, very authoritarian, very repressive regime, and for siding with Tito Asfura. So basically, President Trump is saying, we're going to bet down on the National Party, on being our closest partner, and we do not care if they have very deep links with organized crime and drug trafficking. So when you contrast that against what's going on in Venezuela, it's just so much hypocrisy on behalf of Trump.
Rodolfo Pastor, I remember interviewing your dad, Rodolfo Pastor Fasquel, when I was in Tegucigalpa, flying in with the former president, the ousted president, Mel Zelaya, and his wife, Xiomara Castro, who is president of Honduras now, when they flew back into Honduras after being ousted in a U.S.-backed coup. That was back in, 2009? And it was under Obama and his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. So this intervention is not new, and that led to the rise of Joe, right, of Juan Orlando Hernandez.
U.S. intervention is nothing new for Honduras, Amy. You know, we are the emblematic banana republic. We've been in so many ways shaped by U.S. intervention for the last century in our country. And the coup back in 2009 was a shocking reminder of the fact that we're still subjected to that kind of empire. What happened after 2009, as a result of the coup, was that Juan Orlando was able to make it to power and not only be there for what the Constitution allowed him to be president for, a four-year term, he got reelected against the Constitution that prohibits that reelection from happening, and with the backing again of the United States. And so, you know, from the beginning, from the get-go, what we started learning was that if the United States knew and understood the links that Juan Orlando had to drug trafficking, the corruption that he was responsible for here, the crimes that he was responsible for here, and would stand for him to be reelected against the constitutional prohibitions. You know, we knew that there was not a lot to do. We went to elections in 2013, saw him get elected for the first time. We actually, the Libre Party won those elections, but, you know, through the fraud and through the advantage that drug money gave Juan Orlando Hernandez and public money that had been grafted gave Juan Orlando Hernandez, we were defeated. We again went to the polls in 2017. We won again in that occasion with Salvador Nasrallah as the candidate of the opposition. And yet we were again defeated through fraud. And were repressed when we protested against that fraud. And it was finally in 2021 that Xiomara Castro was finally elected as the first woman president of Honduras, and a transition period had started. It's been a very, very difficult 4 years for Xiomara Castro. We were confronted with a country that had been destroyed in so many ways by the Juan Orlando administration, which stole enormous amounts of public money, which stopped investing in health, in education, in energy, and so we were rebuilding the country, and for this to come to a halt in such a brutal way, as in such an abrupt way again, And also as a result of U.S. intervention, or should I say directly as a Trump intervention, because he did so in a very personal way. He did so on his own social media. And I have not seen as of yet, Amy, any kind of statement coming out of the State Department or the White House or the Department of Justice. Yep. That was such an important ally to bring Juan Orlando to justice.
I want to bring Dana Frank into this discussion, University of California, Santa Cruz, professor of history emerita. You've written a book on Honduras, deeply involved with covering what's going on there. And I last spoke to you when you were going every day to Juan Orlando Hernandez's trial here in New York. This is astounding. Our top news headline is Venezuela's condemned President Trump's unilateral declaration.